The final case on this morning's calendar, Chief Justice O'Connor has recused, and here in her stead is Judge Sheila Farmer from the 5th District. Judge, glad to have you here. The case is 13-1129, State of Ohio versus D'Argo Griffin. And for the state, Ms. Brandt.
Mr. Acting Chief Justice, may it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The question before this court is whether, in a trial for engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, a jury instruction is sufficient on the issue of enterprise when it provides the statutory elements of the offense, it provides the statutory definition for enterprise and pattern of corrupt activity, and it tells the jurors that enterprise and pattern of corrupt activity are two separate elements which need to be proved. An instruction that gives the jury all the information that it needs to decide the questions in a case is a sufficient jury instruction. It does not need to be in the exact language of the defendant's request. In this case, Griffin asked for an instruction that would provide wording or language from the Supreme Court case of Boyle versus U.S., and that would have told the jurors that an enterprise is a group of persons associated together for a common purpose of engaging in a course of conduct, and that it is an ongoing organization whose members function as a continuing unit.
And how does that differ from the statutory definition?
The statutory definition and the instructions that were given in the statutory language told the jurors that in order to find Griffin guilty of engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, it had to find that he, while employed or associated with an enterprise, conducted or participated in the affairs of an enterprise by engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity. It defined participate as performing activities necessary or helpful to the operation of the enterprise.
And the trial judge said that they had to find that over a time frame as well, I believe.
That's correct. It instructed the jury that it had to find that it was a pattern of corrupt activity. It defined pattern as two or more incidents, all related to the affairs of the same enterprise that are not isolated and are not so closely related that they constitute the same event. And also, there was language in the jury instruction that told the jury that the defendant engaged in a pattern of corrupt activity for a period of 3 years, from May 2006 to April 2009.
And the activity was dealing in certain quantities of drugs.
Yes, it was a drug trafficking business. This was a group of people that were joined together, and they were conducting a business of drug trafficking in Dayton. The business had a name. The business name was Peanut. They had business cards, little scraps of paper that had the name Peanut written on them and the telephone number. This group of people.
A business card implies that they went to a printer and got them.
For all intents and purposes, these scraps of paper with the name Peanut on it and with the telephone number provided the information to potential customers that was the place that if they wanted to buy drugs, that's what they would call.
So this could have been written on a restaurant napkin.
That's correct. It could have been written on a restaurant napkin, but it provided the information to the customer to call that number if they wanted drugs. This group of people joined together. They packaged drugs together. They conducted the sales together.
If the charge that the defense defendants. There were two of them tried together, right?
Yes, there were three defendants, but one pled and two were tried together.
If the charge that they had requested had been given, what additional proof would have been required by the state?
No additional proof, because had the instructions been given, had the Boyle instruction been given, it would have just stated the same thing differently. The Boyle instruction that the defendant requested is just a different way of saying what's already in the statute and what's already provided in the instructions. It was superfluous. All of that information that the defendant requested is already in the statute. And when a court instructs the jury in the language of the statute, it's already conveying that information. It's just two different ways of saying the same thing. The defendant's request can be broken down into three parts: association, common purpose, and ongoing and continuing. When you look at the jury instruction that was given, all of those three parts are in there. Association can be found right in the definition of enterprise: a group of persons associated in fact, although not a legal entity. Common purpose can be found in the part of the instructions that told the jury that the defendant, while employed or associated with a enterprise, conducted or participated in the affairs of the enterprise. It can also be found in the definition of participate, performing activities necessary or helpful to the operation of the enterprise. The jury knew from that language that he wasn't working on his own. He wasn't working to further his own affairs. He was working to further the affairs of the group. Common purpose, just two different ways of saying the same thing. Ongoing and continuing, that element can be found in the part of the instructions that told the jury that the defendant, while employed or associated with an enterprise, conducted or participated in the affairs of the enterprise by engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity. And in the definition of pattern, which told the jury that he had to conduct two or more incidents that were related to the affairs of the same enterprise, that were not isolated and were not so closely related to each other that they constituted a single event. And again, as I said, the court also instructed that this occurred over a 3-year period of time. So what the jury knew from that instruction is that it wasn't just one event, it was two or more, a pattern that was related to the affairs of the same enterprise that continued over a course of 3 years. Ongoing and continuing.
I understand you want to get to this, but before you sit down, could you address for me the certified conflict question?
The certified conflict question is the same as the question that this court took on a discretionary appeal. Again, in a trial.
And where is the conflict between which districts?
The conflict is between the 2nd District and the 9th District.
And can you capsulize it in your view, how we should approach the resolution of that conflict?
Yes. I would like this court to find, to resolve the conflict by stating that in a trial for engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, a jury instruction is sufficient to instruct a jury on the element of enterprise when the jury instruction contains the statutory elements of the offense, the statutory definitions of enterprise and pattern of corrupt activity, and when the jury is told that the enterprise and the pattern are two separate elements, both of which need to be proved.
Or you could say differently that it's not necessary to have the federal definition of enterprise.
That's correct.
That's
correct.
Another way of saying what you just said.
Yes, because the statute already contains that language. It's just two different ways of saying the same thing. And when the judge instructs the jury in the language of the statute, the Boyle instruction, the language from Boyle, doesn't need to be given because it's already contained right in the jury instruction.
Does this case really come down to turning on the trial judge exercising discretion to say we don't need the second charge? Because I see some language in the Court of Appeals opinion where they say the Supreme Court has said it's prejudicial error in a criminal case to refuse to administer a requested charge, which is pertinent in the case and states the law correctly and is not covered by the general charge. Is that, do you think what the Court of Appeals turned on is that they feel our case law mandates if a different way of saying it is presented and still correctly states the law, that you've got to give both?
That's what the Court of Appeals found. The Court of Appeals found that since Boyle was a correct statement of Ohio law, that it needed to be given. It did not say where the statutory language was lacking or what was missing from the statutory language. It just said that the statutory language was given, Boyle was not given, therefore it amounted to reversible error.
Counsel, does the Ohio jury instructions, does the OJI currently use the definition of enterprise within the statute? Or does the OJI refer to Boyle? Do you know?
Yes. The OJI refers to the statute, but it also refers to the federal law as well. However, I believe that Boyle confirms that what is in the statute is all that is necessary. Boyle analyzed the federal RICO statute, but the federal RICO statute and the Ohio statute are identical in all important aspects. So Boyle can guide and persuade this court that an instruction in the language of the statute is enough to convey all of the structural features that an enterprise needs. When the court determined what type of structure is required for an enterprise, all it did was look to the plain language of the statute and the ordinary meaning of the words in the statute. That's all it looked at. And what it said in Boyle was derived solely from the statute. So if what the court said in Boyle was based solely on the statute, then the statute is enough to convey those structural elements, and that's all that's needed. Boyle does not need to be stated. It's superfluous, it's not necessary, and it's not required.
Is it your view that this use of business cards, as you refer to them, with the phone numbers, is the enterprise, together with the sale? Is that what you're arguing, or what you did argue to the jury?
It was the fact that it had a business name, business cards. They were working together to package drugs. They were working together to sell drugs. They had different people doing different things along the line of the sale.
And that is the enterprise in the state's view?
Yes. Joining together, working collectively as a unit to sell drugs.
And is that the same as a pattern of corrupt activity or different from that?
The pattern of corrupt activity is the series of criminal acts. However, the evidence...
Multiple sales.
Correct. Multiple sales and multiple acts of possession. The enterprise is a separate element. However, the evidence that was used to describe the series of acts, the evidence of the details of how they performed these criminal acts can be used to prove an enterprise.
Thank you.
Counsel, so that I understand, I'm reading the certified question here, so your position would be that the answer to the certified question is yes.
That the answer to the certified question is yes. In a trial for engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, a jury instruction is sufficient to instruct the jury on the element of enterprise when it provides the statutory elements, the statutory definition, and tells the jury that those are two separate elements that need to be proved. If there are no further questions, I will reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chief Justice, and may it please the court. There's nothing superfluous about the request that we made in this case. The overriding principle in this case is State versus Scott, the decision of this case, which you accurately stated. It is prejudicial error to refuse a jury instruction that is accurate, that states the law, and isn't covered in the general instruction.
Is there any level of proof, further proof, more than what the state had to prove under the instruction as given, that would be required if the, I'll call it supplemental instruction that the defendant timely requested, were included and sent to the jury?
I say yes in this regard. To establish racketeering, a $40 drug sale, is what we're talking about here. By the way, the statutes aren't identical. The federal requirement for racketeering requires at least five people. We're now in Ohio where you can have two kids selling drugs twice if they're F4s, and they've got an F2 on their record for racketeering. We're going way, way far on this thing. But the racketeering requirement requires proof of an enterprise and engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity. Nobody's disputing that there are two separate requirements. The fact that there's a pattern of corrupt activity doesn't mean that there's an enterprise, nebulous or not. What is required of an enterprise? It's pretty clear that an enterprise requires an organization. It requires people with a common purpose, acting with a common goal to achieve that objective.
Was it your argument that that was not established here?
This isn't a sufficiency of the evidence case, Your Honor. It's our argument that the jury wasn't told that an enterprise required concerted effort by parties with a common purpose working together for that purpose.
What did the trial judge say an enterprise was? Because the word enterprise isn't something that's an everyday word.
Exactly.
And you asked for a specific definition of enterprise based on the federal law of what the definition was, correct?
Exactly, Your Honor. And I'm not hung up on the fact that federal versus state. I'm just hung up on what is the correct definition. The definition that we have of enterprise in the code is the definition the judge gave. That definition is circular. It's not adequate. Enterprise, you have to show that a person associated with an enterprise engaged in a pattern of corrupt activity. A person associated with an enterprise. Enterprise is defined as a group of persons associated, in fact. That's not a definition, that's a tautology. Association means association. It's inadequate. So, and it's been recognized as inadequate by federal courts. So what do we want? All we want is to say, hey, what does this term enterprise mean? It has to be ongoing. It has to be people acting with a common purpose. It has to be people with the same objective.
Well, excuse me, but I thought I heard the appellant argue that the trial court did go into the specifics that it had to be a three-year process and did talk about longevity. These weren't just three kids on a street corner talking to each other.
He gave the definition of enterprise based on the statute. He did not give the definition of enterprise that we requested.
So that's all he said? He didn't say what the appellant said he said?
I don't believe that the instructions were adequate on this issue. I don't believe it was handled in that.
That wasn't my question, though. Did he say there had to be some structure and longevity, not those specific words?
I don't believe so. I don't remember. I didn't read that page of the record recently.
Well, somebody's brief had a 3 or 4 page, because I recall reading that last night, of what his instruction was. It was pretty elaborate.
Well, I don't think to me the certified question is the instruction adequate? The statutory instruction is adequate if there's no objection. That's not really the issue. The issue is a proper instruction that's requested required to be given, and it wasn't.
But that's not the certified question.
Right, but the certified question is simplistic. It says,
I would agree with you.
Yeah, it says, is it adequate? Well, it might be adequate if there's no objection, but there was an objection in this case. So you're not, it's not covering the issue. An instruction can be accurate without being complete. I think, for example, when I was prosecutor, we had a theft case, and it involved theft in a store. And I asked the judge to be sure and give an instruction that it is not required that the defendant take the item outside the store. He doesn't have to go past the checkout line to be guilty of theft. The judge gave that instruction. Why? Because it's an accurate statement of the law. Is it in the OJI? No. Is it an accurate statement of the law? Yes. Was it important? You bet it was. The jury told the judge, oh, I'm really glad you said that because we would have been hung up on that otherwise. And it's the same thing here. An enterprise requires people functioning as a common unit. What if you had three guys that played cards every Friday night and they ran numbers on the side? Well, if they ran numbers independently, they're not functioning as a unit. They might be in an organization. They might play cards at the Eagles.
But that's not the facts here of three cigar-smoking chums get together and play poker on Friday night that are all involved in separate criminal activities.
Well, I'd be happy to discuss the four predicate acts in this case were an $80 drug sale, a $40 drug sale involving only one of the people, a possession of a baggie of heroin when four people were in a car, including a Monique Pope, who was not considered a conspirator, and another time that the car was stopped and there was drugs in the car then. No sale in either. So there's four predicate acts, two of which were possession, two of which were sale, involving separate people. So I don't see this as La Cosa Nostra. I see a couple of young kids on the west side of Dayton Peanut was a nickname, by the way, of one of the people, wasn't the organization. And certainly, to have an enterprise, you don't need to be incorporated. These people don't get W-2s, we understand.
Did it come out in the evidence where they got the heroin?
Pardon me?
Did the evidence reveal where the heroin came from?
No, Your Honor. In one case...
So these are just a bunch of kids that just happen to have some heroin?
Well, certainly...
Is that what your argument is?
Not for the 27 grams, but for the one predicate act was 1 gram of heroin.
So one could just infer that there was some source of the heroin coming to the four individuals that you've described to us, correct?
They got it somewhere, yeah.
They sure did.
Sure they did.
And they sold it somewhere.
That heroin wasn't sold.
I thought you said there were two sales.
There were two sales.
That's what I thought you said.
There were two cases where there were sales.
Yes.
There were two cases where there was possession. I thought you were talking about the possession.
All right.
There were two times the cars were stopped and the people were searched and there was heroin in the car.
Right.
Now, the one sale took place at a Knights Inn hotel and two of the guys were in there together. And that looks like organization for that particular transaction. But again, I'm not arguing about the sufficiency of the evidence. I'm talking about the sufficiency of the instruction.
Got it.
And the other sale just involved one person of this group. Is that adequate?
Well, I think the overarching rub, as you see it, is that prosecutors are starting to use the RICO statute against drug dealers to get longer sentences.
Well, they certainly are. F2s give longer time than F4s. That's certainly true. I mean, that's the social problem. Yes, the immediate problem is, is this really racketeering? Is this really an enterprise? And did the jury have a right to determine, are these people off acting on their own? Are they actually acting as an organization? Because there's multiple people in these multiple counts doing multiple things. And it wasn't really a very well-organized organization if such existed, and the jury should have been entitled to know that enterprise requires more than just the fact that there are certain people that commit certain activities.
Do you have the actual language that was submitted to the trial judge for inclusion?
No, and that was an issue that was raised vigorously by the state in the Court of Appeals. They said, hey, what's the actual instruction you asked for? And basically what I didn't try the case, but what the trial lawyer said, well, we want an instruction based on Boyle and Turquette. and the Court of Appeals held that's sufficient. It was obvious what they wanted, but no, they didn't submit a written instruction, and that certainly would have been the preferable method.
Because the court starts its instructions talking about the elements of the offense, and then the next paragraph is, now enterprise includes any individual corporation, proprietorship, et cetera, and it talks about what an enterprise includes, but there's no... You're saying there's no definition of the word enterprise itself to explain what that is to the jury.
Well, I mean, there is the definition of enterprise, but you're right. But the definition of enterprise says includes. It doesn't say it's an exhaustive list. It also, again, it's circular.
And it doesn't say what an enterprise is in common language for the jury.
Not in my opinion. I believe it doesn't state that they need to have a common purpose and acting in concert. And like I said, people can certainly sell drugs by themselves without doing so in concert with other people, and certainly they can possess drugs without being in concert with other people. And you know, the evidence was sufficient to uphold a conviction, but the defendant was entitled to have his case presented with proper expanded instruction.
Well, if I was reading correctly, wasn't the reversal for engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity? That was what was reversed.
That's true.
And the enterprise was affirmed.
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay.
Enterprise is necessary for corrupt activity.
Pardon me, please.
Pardon me?
I didn't hear you.
No, enterprise is a necessary element of the corrupt activity. So
right.
If the corrupt activity is reversed, the enterprise is reversed.
Okay.
Mr. Griffin, his conviction was affirmed on possession of a large amount of heroin. So, yeah, he got a five-year sentence just for that count.
If we affirm this case, does that affect the co-defendant in any way, or does that cause disparate treatment between the two individuals?
That's a really great question. He won his case, and the state didn't appeal to the Supreme Court, so he's already not been convicted of RICO. And I'll run with this. It was ironic. Mr. Griffin appealed. He didn't raise the same issue that his co-defendant did. Then he says, wait a second, my conviction got affirmed, and this guy got reversed, so he applied to reopen for incompetent counsel. I got appointed. You know, assignment of error number one, hey, you reversed in the co-defendant's case, why not ours? And the Court of Appeals, in my case, kind of gritted their teeth and said, well, if it was this panel, we're not so sure we'd rule that way, but stare decisis says we do have to rule as the co-defendant. So Mr. Franklin does not have a RICO conviction. That's your quick answer with a little background. Unless there are any other questions, that's all I wished to present to the court.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hackman.
You're welcome, Your Honor.
Ms. Brandt, you've got a little time left for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the facts that supported enterprise, I just wanted to point out that the Second District Court of Appeals in Franklin and also in Griffin found that there was sufficient evidence to support the enterprise, and that would be at paragraph 27 in State versus Griffin and paragraph 106 in State versus Franklin. But the real issue before this court is whether or not the trial court could properly refuse an instruction in the language of Boyle when all of the information contained in Boyle was already contained in the jury instructions that it gave.
And do you agree we don't have the precise instruction that was requested in the record?
The request for the instruction appears at transcript page 1367.
So it is there?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. However, as I stated before, that instruction was just two different ways of saying the same thing. The three parts that the defendant was asking for, which is association, common purpose, and ongoing and continuing, are all contained in the instruction that was given, that is in the statutory language.
Except was there an actual definition of here's what an enterprise is? There was not. I know you're talking about piecing together the instruction as it was given, that the information is there. But here we have the defendant saying, I want a definition of enterprise as the feds have defined it, and that wasn't given. So it was an accurate statement that wasn't given in other places in the instruction. Wasn't it required under Scott?
Well, what the defendant was requesting was that the instruction read that an enterprise is a group of persons associated together with a common purpose of engaging in a course of conduct, and that it is an ongoing organization whose members function as a continuing unit. The definition that the defendant wanted instructed on also uses the words a group of persons associated together. The definition of enterprise is a group of persons associated in fact, although not a legal entity. Just two different ways of saying the same thing. The other elements of common purpose, that is contained in the part of the instructions that talks about that he conducted or participated in the affairs of the enterprise, and that he performed activities necessary or helpful to the operation of the enterprise.
So can you tell us where in the transcript the actual definition that the court gave, where we can find that?
Yes. That is at pages 1411 to 1412 and 1418 to 1419.
So there were two definitions given of enterprise?
Oh, for the definition of enterprise, it is at 1411 and 1412. But
counsel,
I would say that...
Counsel, these are not written instructions that were given to the jury?
They were written instructions that were given to the jury.
Including the ones that were requested by the defendant?
The request for the Boyle instruction was not in writing. It was just orally argued. Justice Langzinger, getting back to your point, I would point out, though, that the definition of enterprise in and of itself... that is part of the instruction that I would ask the court to look at, because it is the entire instruction that conveyed the elements of association, common purpose, and ongoing and continuing. And it is the entire jury instruction that is the reason why the Boyle instruction was not required, because it was just superfluous.
So you're saying Scott is not violated in this case?
No. Even if Boyle is a correct statement of law, the instruction that the defense was requesting was not required because all of that information was already covered in the general charge, and a trial court has considerable discretion in refusing an instruction that is already, the substance of which is already conveyed in the general charge, and this instruction was already contained in the general charge, and for that reason, I would ask this court to reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the defendant Griffin's conviction for engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity.
Thank you. The case is submitted, and you will be advised the outcome at a later point in time. Marshal, if you would adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.